Welcome to On Your Money Tuesday. I'm Joy Curdine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, November 27th. Hope you had a very nice Thanksgiving and Black Friday and Small Business Saturday and Cyber Monday. Financial planner Kevin McKinley is here on this Tuesday to talk about some of the pros and cons of cyber shopping, and we'll have some more advice on our money as well. We welcome your questions at 1-800-642-1234, whether your questions are about shopping or financial investments. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. He joins us from our studios in Eau Claire. Good morning, Kevin. Oops. I must have a problem here. I don't know where Kevin is. Let me see if I brought up the wrong button. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin, are you there? Kevin, are you there? I am here. Can you hear me?
Good morning, Joy.
Where you been?
We're just working on some buttons.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you are. I thought maybe you were, you know, online shopping or something.
Yeah, they've done a little bit of that, and I think I'm going to be doing a lot of that before we're all done. In-store, online, everywhere. I'm blowing through our money as fast as I can. Yeah.
So yesterday was Cyber Monday, and apparently one company cornered the market in online sales?
That's right. It was Amazon.com. It was a busy place on Monday. In 2011, on Cyber Monday, Amazon sold about 200 items per second, and on dollar-wise anyways, looks like their sales were up about 50% in 2012 on Cyber Monday. Now, Amazon.com will get about 20% of overall online sales, according to the National Council of State Legislators, and that's about $60 billion in gross revenue for the company. They offer a ton of other services. It's really just a treasure trove of most of all the different things that they offer. And they offer some really great things for the consumer as well, which we'll talk about later on. But there could be a general cost to Amazon being as good as they are at selling stuff to people.
What is that cost?
Well, it's we can start with the sales tax issue. The rules generally from state to state are if a retailer does not have a presence in that state, they don't have to charge sales tax when they sell items to people in that state. So if you buy something from someone around the country, whether it's online or catalog or whatever, you generally don't have to. Sales tax isn't charged on that actual purchase. And nationwide, there was a University of Tennessee study that said that that cost states about $11 billion over the past year. Now, some states are enacting tax laws to garner internet sales taxes. And Wisconsin technically does have a law on the books. It requires people to report out-of-state purchases and then put it on as a use tax when they fill out the Wisconsin state income tax form. But most don't, people don't pay for that. They don't calculate it. You could owe fines and penalties if you're audited and they say, hey, you really, you're kidding me, you didn't buy anything online. But it's a very small dollar amount on a per-person basis, but statewide, it's pretty big. It's $157 million in lost sales tax revenue, according to the Journal Sentinel in Milwaukee. That's a ton of money. It's 1% of the state's budget, but when we're trying to raise revenue and or cut back wherever possible, $157 million can really add up.
Yeah, I bet. So does all this online shopping hurt the brick-and-mortar store downtown?
Absolutely. The nice thing about the brick-and-mortar store downtown, first of all, is you can see the product, you can touch it, and you can check it out, and you can ask someone right there if it's a good one. But generally, the inventory is probably not as easily accessible as Amazon's billion-dollar inventory, and plus, you know, it might cost a little bit more, and it's not as convenient to drive downtown or out to the mall and check things out. The average time spent online at a place like Amazon.com, according to Forrester Research on Friday, was about 6.5 minutes to shop, find the item you're looking for, and complete the purchase. 6.5 minutes, it takes me about that long just to get the car warmed up and get out of the driveway, much less get to the actual store and make the purchase. So that's where the local brick-and-mortar stores really have a hard time competing. But that ends up costing the local communities as well. First of all, you're looking out at less profits for the owners if they are local people. You're also looking at less employee wages as well for the people who probably work and live in the community and the income taxes that they pay on those wages as well. And finally, property taxes. All these stores that you see and that you're buying from, whether it is the mall or a local mom-and-pop shop, they pay property taxes, which helps support things in the community as well.
So is there a solution that could help offset this trend or this move toward virtual online shopping?
Sure, and keep in mind, it seems that as a percentage of retail, online commerce is still only about 5% of all dollars that are spent on a retail basis, but that number is definitely growing and expected to grow even more so in the future. Some stores are looking to stop showrooming, where someone can go into a big electronics store, look at an item, check it out, shop around, then check the price on Amazon, find out it's, you know, might be 10 bucks cheaper or whatever, and then buy it from there. So some stores are looking at blocking access to cellular phones. Other ones are trying to increase the experience so you'll have more of an incentive to do it. Amazon might actually solve its own problem because, first of all, they're becoming a little bit more amenable to actually paying sales taxes or else charging people and collecting sales taxes. But Amazon is trying to become even faster at delivering goods and services to people. So what they're doing is they're building more distribution centers and spreading them out throughout the country. And every time they put a distribution center in a community, they not only have to employ people there, but they also have to start paying taxes because they have a presence in that community as well. One thing you can do if there's a I wish it were socially acceptable to do this. I'm afraid it might embarrass the retailer, but you might say, hey, you know what? I bought this on Amazon. It was 20 bucks cheaper, but here's a $10 tip just because I like having you in the community. And sometimes, you know, that might be as much profit as the retailer would make if you had bought the item there in the first place.
That's a good idea. I don't know, Kevin, if you know much about this, but I've been hearing our own promotions on this station that if you start a search for an item that you wish to purchase on Amazon, that if you start that search from the WPR.org website, our website, a portion of the sale will benefit Wisconsin Public Radio, and I understand other nonprofits do this as well. So that sounds like it's a way for Amazon to try to give to the community.
Yep. Well, it's a way for them to drive traffic to their site and get you to buy stuff. But yes, it is a way for them to try to give back. And that's not just true for nonprofits, for-profit people. You can set up an account with Amazon where you can advertise their products. And if they click through your site and buy something at Amazon, you'll get a small percentage of that. But yes, that's a great idea for people who say, I'm going to shop at Amazon anyway. I'd like to help an organization about which I care. And you can set your homepage at WPR.org. And then whenever you're ready to buy something, click through at Amazon. It doesn't cost you any more, and it doesn't cost Wisconsin Public Radio anything, but it's one way to put a little bit extra pennies in the coffers.
Speaking of giving to Wisconsin Public Radio, next week, a week from today, is our one day, it's not even a day, it's a 4-hour pledge drive, our end of the year pledge drive on Wisconsin Public Radio, and it will be starting at 6 o'clock in the morning, and it will be ending at 10 o'clock in the morning. And that includes next Tuesday's On Your Money, Kevin. I think you've been plotting some sort of gift for the good girls and boys who donate.
In my lair, yes. My henchmen and women and I have been plotting something. You're correct. And I'm honored that we're included in this because On Your Money listeners support this show and Wisconsin Public Radio in an amazingly overwhelming amount. Every single time we've raised money, we're just blown away by the number of people who pledge support and the dollars that they give. So we really appreciate this. And to thank you for your pledge during On Your Money, we are going to offer a brand new updated version of the mini money booklet that started it all. It's 20 money moves. 20 money moves. Now, this is advice that we give out during the show, that I give out in my private practice for a lot. People pay me a lot of money to get it on a personalized basis. You can pledge at any dollar amount, and you will get a free copy of the 20 Money Moves mini money booklet, and we'll cover everything in there. This is, we'll talk about insurance, we'll talk about saving for retirement, saving for college, paying off debt, trying to figure out how much you can spend, how much you need to retire. And it's only 14 pages, so you're not going to be overwhelmed with some 200-page book that you have to pour through and find what applies to you. There's lots of places to you can skip ahead to a different section and start learning. Best of all, if you pledge any dollar amount during next week's show and you get your copy of the On Your Money Mini Money Booklet, 20 Money Moves, you get to stop listening to the show.
No, we don't want you to stop listening to the show.
You're right. Sorry. You have to keep listening.
We want you to stay tuned this hour, too. We will take your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is the managing member of McKinley Money LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any investor. Investors should consult with their own financial advisors prior to making any investment decisions. And it is time now for the On Your Money email bag. And Libby says, good morning, Kevin and Joy. I love your show. My husband and I recently had our first baby, and we are now in need of a new car. My husband's car is almost old enough to drive itself and has nearly 300,000 miles on it. We are looking at buying something new, either the Toyota RAV4 or the Prius. What should we do? Wow, 300,000 miles, Kevin. What should they do?
Well, it's one of the reasons, Joy, I love living and working in Wisconsin and having a show on Wisconsin Public Radio that all address the subject of money, because people in Wisconsin do not brag about the kind of car they drive. They brag about how many miles are on the odometer.
Right.
And Libby is guilty of that as well. And people no one will come and say, I paid $58,000 for my Lincoln Navigator Quad 4. They will stand up in public and loudly declare to complete strangers, 218,000 miles, Honda Accord, never changed the oil. So
yeah.
I like that about it. Reflects a lot on our values.
Libby does go on to say that both of the cars they're looking at are about the same price with similar financing options. But she notes the Prius gets much better gas mileage. So which would they be better off getting, do you think?
Well, the Prius is attractive. You definitely save a lot of money on gas, and even though gas prices have dropped a little bit at 40 miles per gallon or so, you are going to save a lot of money when it's $3.50 or $4 a gallon, and Priuses do hold their resale value very well. A lot of people who are looking to save money on a vehicle definitely look for a used one first, and so those Priuses tend to really retain their resale value fairly well, especially compared to other vehicles.
And I'm very interested in this answer too, Kevin, because coincidentally, my husband and I were wandering some car lots in Madison on Sunday, and he was interested in the RAV4. What about the RAV4?
I like it. I get high responses back from people I know who own a RAV4 and also people who own the Honda CRX, two very similar vehicles that seem to know an awful lot of people who drive those and are extremely happy with them. They also hold their resale value very well, and it's got some other things about it that that the Prius doesn't have, especially in terms of room. But you're still going to get good mileage, just not nearly as good as the Prius.
Yeah. So do you have a preference? Which one would you recommend?
As someone who has fathered at least three children, I would tell Libby and her husband to strongly consider the RAV4, not so much because of the gas mileage. I'd even like them to get an all-wheel drive. People who are especially having children at an older age know that if you have to bend down to get a baby put into a car carrier, and you'll be doing that a lot every time you get in and out of the vehicle, after a while your lower back pain can pretty much qualify you for disability. And so the elevated stature, if you will, of the RAV4 will make it much easier to get that baby in and out of the car seat for Libby. I also like to see them get the all-wheel drive just because Despite today's weather, it will snow here eventually, and it will be ice, so it'd be nice to have a little bit more stability on the roads as well. And, like I said, you can hold a lot more precious cargo, like a baby, in that RAV4 than you can in the Prius. You get a little better vision. And, quite frankly, I'm guessing that Libby probably won't be driving a whole lot, and if she's not, the gas mileage difference won't make that much difference financially. However, I would say to her and everyone else who is listening, you definitely want to finance that purchase because interest rates are so low right now. And that's also one of the topics that we will be covering in the 20 Money Moves Mini Money Book that we are giving away with every pledge next week during On Your Money. So if you want to know why you should borrow money to buy a car rather than pay cash for it, we cover that in this On Your Money Mini Money Booklet.
Good. Well, that sounds great. If you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email, onyourmoney@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine with financial planner Kevin McKinley, and this is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
The best things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money.
You are listening to On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Your Money, we will finish up a short series on healthcare with a discussion about Medicare. And Kevin will also have some more tips on how to get the most out of your money if you spend it online at Amazon.com. And we have an open line for you if you have a question for Kevin about any money matter. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. And we'll take our first call. Mary in Pewaukee is with us. Hello, Mary.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. I have a question. We own a home, still have 50-some thousand to pay on it. My question is, we are wondering if we should proceed with purchasing another home. We are eligible for all or most for another mortgage. And I just don't know if with the economy we should, because it's turning around, the housing market is getting much better, and we wanted to purchase before spring when prices may start going up. And this third home we could either rent out, or we would rent it and then live there when we retire, which is between 6 and 8 years from now.
Kevin, what do you think?
Sounds like, Mary, you're trying to corner the residential real estate market in southeastern Wisconsin. Is that true? Have we blown your cover here?
Lake properties, yeah.
Okay, good.
Who doesn't want a property on a lake?
Yeah, that's right. Well, actually, people are going to start calling in right now and saying, me, I don't want one. We bought one. We're never up there. The mortgage payments, the property tax, all that kind of that, they're adding up. But you have a second home already, right?
Yes.
Is that true, Mary? You have a second home now? Okay, are you renting that out, or is that a lake home?
We are renting that out. And we do not owe anything on that. We used our 401k money.
Okay. I actually don't mind this. Here's why I don't mind it. I don't think you're going to make any money or buy in at a really great price and then watch the price shoot up on the lake home, just because whatever boom and bust we've had in housing, and things are turning up, and we'll talk about that in a few weeks in housing, but I don't think we're returning back to the boom era of the 2007-2008 time. So I don't think I plan on making a lot of money on it. The reason I do like buying it is because interest rates are so very, very low on mortgages, and if you're comfortable financing that thing out 30 years and getting maybe a 3.5% mortgage and the bank is willing to lend you that amount, I think you should look at it. It does allow you to build up a little equity. It's a forced savings. And the notion about renting it out, I'm not crazy about it, but I like it better in your case than I do for other people, because you have already experienced this. You've already rented out a property. You know the ins and the outs. You know what it's like to get called at 3 o'clock in the morning to unlock the door or unclog the toilet or whatever. So you've gone through this. So you know the advantages and disadvantages of it. Rental property, as you probably know already, Mary, and for other people out there who are considering this, it's a great way to get rich slowly. Right? Mm-hmm. It takes forever. And the reason being is that the cost of paying the mortgage and the property taxes and the maintenance and upkeep is usually just about offset by the rental income. You get a little bit in write-offs, but over time you hopefully build up equity. And one way you can help yourself that is by hedging yourself is by getting that fixed rate. So I don't think it's the worst idea. I wouldn't go crazy on buy a palace, but a smaller, sensible place. And I like the notion of thinking about it and saying, look, we get this all on one level, not a huge amount of stairs to navigate. We might choose to move there in 6 or 8 years.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Well, thank good luck so to you, Mary. That sounds wonderful.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for the call. A lake home. I'd like that, but not now. Paul in East Troy is with us. Hello, Paul.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to get back to the idea of purchasing a hybrid versus the RAV4 or some other small SUV. I just did that. I replaced my 96 RAV4 with 250,000 miles on it with a Prius. And to me, the issue, certainly the economics are important. The cost is about the same. Utility of the car is important. But to me, the final selling point was that I guess I decided it's finally time to walk the walk and start using less fuel. So to me, there are other issues a little bit in addition to just those of the economic ones.
So your beliefs might play a part in what you do, Kevin.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with Paul's take on that. And here we, this is a good comment on our diverse background. Someone calls in with a problem and Paul answers it basically in the exact same situation. So thank you, Paul. And I do agree with that. Not everyone has the opportunity to make that choice. But if you do have it and it is important to you, I agree with you. You should just say, you know what, I'm tired of... I know a lot of people who can afford to buy a fleet of vehicles if they feel like it, and they're driving around in something that's not a whole lot bigger than a golf cart for the very reason that Paul talks about, of just saying, look, I just don't want to burn any more gas than I absolutely have to.
Thank you very much, Paul, for the call. 1-800-642-1234. If you have a question for Kevin, you can also email us a question at onyourmoney@wpr.org. Our next caller is Jim in Stevens Point. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Very good. What's your question?
I have a question on long-term care. I have the opportunity, if you want to call it that, I'm 65 years old, to pay down in one lump sum for the remaining 15 years of the policy at $36,000. And my question is, would it be wiser to try to tack that onto a $80,000 mortgage refi, or to use 401k or other opportunities that I have to pay for that premium?
Have you decided unequivocally, Jim, that you are going to go through with this long-term care purchase?
Got 15 years of premiums already paid on it, and the price is good, although the lump sum is kind of a killer. But yes,
I agree with you. I agree with you. The lump sum is a killer. If there is a way that you can continue to just pay as you go on a month-to-month basis, I would much rather have you do that. And the reason being is that when you give your money to an insurance company for something like any lump sum insurance, you're basically betting that they will always be there to provide the insurance that you're purchasing. And usually that's going to be the case, but you never know. And you're asking for them to be there to provide something that you may not even need. And
correct.
You don't know if you'll need it, when you'll need it, and how you'll need it. You know, people like purchasing life insurance on themselves way more than they like purchasing long-term care insurance, because they know they buy life. They know if you have a life insurance policy in force and you die, somebody you care about is going to get some money, and that's all there is to it. Long-term care, you don't know if you need it, when you need it, how much. And my guess is over time that new solutions will evolve and many will go away as these baby boomers start to age and need this type of coverage. I think many long-term care insurance companies are asking themselves, is this really a business we want to stay in? And it's one thing to pay it on a monthly basis, and it costs about $150 to $200 a month for a decent policy. But giving them $36,000, I'm not a big fan of that. Now, if you were to do it, I'd rather have you use the mortgage money to do it. I know people, Jim, who are smarter and richer than you and me, or me for sure, who said, you know what, all I'm going to do is I'm going to get a cash out of my mortgage, I'm going to park $200,000 in the bank at 1%, and that's my long-term care coverage right there. And the difference between what they pay in interest on the mortgage and what they earn in interest on the money often is less than what the premium costs, and then they know they can get the money if they need it, and it will be there if they need it for long-term care or anything else. So if you are going to do this, I'd much rather have you get it out of the mortgage, and I would much rather have you pay as you go rather than handing this big lump sum over to the insurance company.
Jim, thanks very much for the call, and good luck to you. This seems like it would be a good time to finish up our series on health care with our talk about Medicare. What about Medicare, Kevin?
Well, it sounds like it's for old people, and it is, until you actually are eligible for it, and then you say, wait a minute, I'm 65, and this really isn't that old. That doesn't sound as old to me as it did when I was 35 or 45. So no matter what your age is, you definitely need to pay attention to the issue. Medicare basic covers doctor visits and hospitalization. There's a lot that it doesn't cover, including long-term care. By the way, if you are older and you've qualified for Medicare, you definitely know that changes come each and every single year. And if you are younger, it's not only going to affect your retirement, but you also may be caring for an older relative who is covered for Medicare. So it's important that you know the basics of how it works. And it's not just Medicare. There's also the Advantage plans, the drug plans, Medigap. And it seems like every time there's an election or some new Congress, we get new things written into to Medicare as well. So definitely a topic we're going to talk about today, but also in the future as well.
So I'm not 65 yet, but where do I sign up? What happens? Are you just automatically entered into Medicare when you turn 65?
Yeah, I understand you do read at the level of a 65-year-old, Joy, so congratulations on that. Good for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you basically get a notice for the program, and you must enroll for it unless you're covered by a qualifying plan at an employer, but you definitely have to enroll for it in the A and B. The enrollment period is usually a few months before you turn 65, and then annually this year from October 15th to December 7th. And there is a cost to it, even though you do have a lot of your care coverage. The cost of basic Medicare is a premium, about $100 a month, but it is means tested. People who have adjusted gross income of about $214,000 or more will pay three times that amount in their premium. And even when you are on Medicare and you're retired, you're 65, everything's great, you will still spend about $400 to $500 per month on out-of-pocket expenses, including uncovered expenses, deductibles, and this premium as well. Best place to start, though, on the basic Medicare plan is to go to mymedicare.gov, and we'll have a link to that website at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
So what are these Medicare Advantage plans that I hear about?
These are the Part C, and it's usually for people who have a specific provider or network that they want to stay in, and it's kind of Medicare, but through a private provider, and you can go to Medicare.gov and search for different local Medicare Advantage plans. They have star ratings now, which can be helpful. Five stars is as good as they get. You can look for the different Medicare Advantage plans in your area, and then search by the star function as well. And again, that's at Medicare.gov, and we'll link that website to it on yourmoney.com.
And then there's also Medicare Part D. What's this?
That's right. The D stands for drug, and you get a drug coverage through a private insurer. You pay a monthly premium and then plus a yearly deductible on top of that, and basically save on your pharmaceutical expenses. And what you want to look for in that is, first of all, find one that's in the serves the plan network, but more importantly, you kind of want to work backwards. You want to say, well, these are the treatments my doctor is recommending, so I'm going to find a Part D plan that covers that and work backwards from it rather than trying to say, well, I'm going to pick out which plan and then go forward with the care that's dictated by that particular plan.
And then finally, there's the Medigap.
Yeah, these are all those letters where, after it's E, F, G through K or L or whatever. And this basically takes the place of the Medicare Advantage plan, where this is, you have basic Medicare, through the government, you have a supplemental policy on top of it as well. Same kind of enrollment period, but there are many different plans, and the coverage and the cost can change quite a bit depending on your situation or the area in which you live and the year-to-year basis. So it can be something that's very difficult to navigate, especially because your health can change from a year-to-year basis.
You know, Kevin, we heard a lot of talk about Medicare reform during the presidential campaign, and there's still entitlement reforms on the table now to avoid the fiscal cliff. Is Medicare going to go away?
I don't think Medicare is going to go away. I think it is going to change in part because of the cost issues. In 1986, it was about 1.2% of our nation's gross domestic product, and even though the GDP has grown substantially since then, it's about three times that now. It takes up about 3.7% of GDP, and we are only 2 years into the baby boomers turning 65. We've got about 16 years of that left. And the bad news about Medicare is that it's not only becoming more complex to try to figure it out, but people are trying to navigate this at an age in which, you know, our faculties are declining. Usually your mid-50s is usually the peak of your financial acumen. So 10 years after that is when you have to start sorting through all that stuff. And you're, of course, usually at the biggest risk health-wise, for needing this actual coverage than you've ever been in your life as well. So it's a really tough situation. I hope a huge industry springs up where, you know, there's just independent Medicare consultants where, you know, you can go into a strip mall and sit down for $100 an hour and somebody will ask you what your situation is and then tell you which plan you should sign up for.
Sounds promising. I hope so, too. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, Managing Member of McKinley Money, LLC. If you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Let's go to Teresa in Friendship next. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Over Thanksgiving, we were talking with my parents about getting a will. And they had said that they had seen a lawyer, and the lawyer said that they didn't need a will because they want to divide everything up equally and they don't have a lot of stuff. And so they're right now planning not to get a will. Is this good advice?
It's the sign of either a really good lawyer or a not so good lawyer. Really good in the sense of saying, look, I could charge you to do this, but I like you and I don't want to take your money for something that you don't need, so I'm not going to do that. Or it could be someone that says, I don't feel like doing it or I don't want to work with you, so I'm going to tell you you don't need a lawyer. Technically, you really don't need a will per se. Wisconsin is a state that allows a holographic will, which is handwritten, if you will, so you can set that one as long as it's witnessed by a couple independent people. And there is a law that, you know, says here's how property is supposed to be divided. Even in a situation like your parents, Teresa, that I'm interested in giving them some kind of legal advice or counsel. It's not so much about how their stuff should be split up, but I'd like to see them have things like advance directives for health care. I'd like to see durable powers of attorney, health care powers of attorney, HIPAA papers so that you may check on their well-being if they're laid up in a hospital someplace. All of those things can be set up by a qualified lawyer. It might cost, you know, $500 to $1,500, depending on your situation and the attorney, for a simple setup for that. But it goes back to the case where, like a lot of legal expenses, you can either pay a lawyer a little now or a lot later. And when you're dealing with someone, I'm assuming your parents are probably in their 70s or so or more?
They actually just turned 60.
Youngsters.
Okay. And they cleverly haven't died yet, so they really don't need a will per se. But they may at some point, or more importantly, they may get caught in that limbo between life and death where they are technically alive, but they just can't make those decisions. So I would like them to go back and find another attorney if they can, or go back to the original one and say, no, I appreciate you doing this, but we really do need this. And if you're not interested in doing it for us, could you please refer someone who can set up these things that we need?
So, Teresa, will your parents listen to Kevin McKinley?
I hope so.
We'll be the first.
Yeah, thank you very much for the call. Next, we go to Laura in Madison. Hi, Laura.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Like your first caller, we've made the decision to actually build a lake house that we're hoping to enjoy with our family for the next 15 years or so and eventually retire there. And I'm actually in the fortunate position that a relative has passed away. And in the estate, I'm actually coming into some money that will actually, it'll pay for the house and a little bit more. The question that I think my husband and I are wrestling with is, given how low interest rates are right now, is it a good idea for us to pay off our house with the money that we're coming into, or should we invest it and continue to just keep the mortgage? We're both employed, but we also, you know, we've got three kids that we're paying for private school and all that sort of thing. So we're in a good financial situation overall. But what would you suggest that we should be thinking about in this case?
Laura, that's a very well-articulated question, and I really appreciate you asking it, because not only Joy, but both the regular listeners to On Your Money right now are answering this question for you, and that is that you should take out the mortgage. You should keep that money set aside that you are fortunate enough to receive in the inheritance, and when you get the kids, I assume you've got kids, if they're probably on their way to college at some point?
Hopefully. We're still a long ways off from that, but that's the plan.
Okay. Well, you've got a lot of expenses now, and you say you and your husband are both working, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Are you maximizing your at-work retirement plan options? Are you putting as much in as you can?
Yep, we are.
Okay, good. I'd like to see you put that money aside and put it in something safe. Don't try to beat the interest rate by investing it, but I would like to see you continue to max out your at-work retirement plans. Use that money to pay for things that you otherwise may have had to borrow for, like school or a car purchase or something. If you do qualify for Roth IRAs, I would use those as well, too. And then once you get 10 to 15 years down the road, the kids are out of college, you're ready to retire, whatever, you can always pay that extra mortgage off if you want. But you're right in the sense of saying we don't know that we will ever have the chance to borrow as much on a particular property now as we do at a rate so low and for 30 years fixed. And if I'm wrong on that and you've kept this mortgage for 30 years, you know, I hope that's the worst thing that befalls you financially, because it's a pretty small price to pay for having access to all that liquidity. Do whatever you want with it, and all you have to do is just come up with one monthly payment to get 30 new days to figure out where the next payment's going to come from.
Yes. Okay, great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Laura, for the call. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. You're listening to On Your Money. If you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Coming up, some tips on getting the most bang for your buck on Amazon. That's coming up on Your Money on the Ideas Network. Money is on our mind. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, and it's time for our Shop Around segment. Amazon.com can offer an overwhelming number of ways to save money, but as Kevin will tell us, you have to make sure you don't spend any more than you have to. Kevin.
Well, it looks like only about a quarter of Americans have ever purchased something from Amazon.com. That's a significant amount, but that means that 75% of us are not familiar with both the opportunities and pitfalls of using this ubiquitous service. Obviously, it allows you to compare prices very quickly. Shipping is usually fairly low. You get a really nice bank of reviews from the Amazon community, if you will. Most of those reviews are fairly legitimate and detailed, and they offer the chance to check out by different star ratings that you can as well. And they have things like this little gold box deal where they put up a periodic, heavily discounted item, and you know it's only available for a short period of time and in a limited amount, but it is substantially cheaper than the normal retail price for it. And you can even save more money on different services and options by becoming a Prime member of Amazon.
So are there benefits and costs to doing this kind of shopping on Amazon?
Yeah, the Prime membership is $79 a year. You can get a student membership, 6 months free, and then $39. And then they have another one for moms that offers some shipping discounts and also discounts on basics like diapers, wipes, etc. As a Prime member, you get free two-day shipping and discounted one-day shipping as well. And then, if you're a Netflix customer, you'll like this. You get virtually unlimited movies, music, TV shows that you can download. Now, not every song, movie, and TV show is on there, but they do have millions of different offerings from which to choose. And if you do use that Kindle, it works really nicely with that as well. And you can actually share the Prime membership with up to four other family members. And when they say family members, they're not too strict on whom you share that with, and they don't, you know, check your DNA or lineage to see if it really is a family member. And if you do want to see if it's right for you, you can sign up for the Prime membership. You get a free one-month trial, and then after that, it's $79 a year.
So you mentioned the Kindle. Do I want a Kindle?
Sure. We all want every kind of tablet there is. We want just, you know, a portfolio of tablets out there, depending on our specific need. Kindle's not bad, depending on what you're going to use it for. It's definitely one of the lowest-priced tablets out there. The Kindle e-reader starts at $69 and gives you, you know, that gray ink, if you will. It gives you access to a lot of books that you can get. Kindle Fire is about $500 or so, and that one you're probably getting, you know, close to iPad territory on that. You might be better off with the iPad. If you're a reader and you want to just spend as little as possible, the Kindle is really a great way to go. The Nook from Barnes & Noble is another nice kind of a compromise between the iPad as well. The biggest drawback, though, of both the Nook and the Kindle, for that matter, are the fact that they're not iPads, and you just don't have as many apps. They're not quite as usable. But again, they're a lot less expensive than even the mini iPad and the regular sized one as well.
What are some of the lesser known ways, Kevin, to save money with Amazon?
Amazon's trying to become a supermarket to the world and offering a lot of groceries, including one of my favorite things about Amazon is they sell milk. And there is a gallon of milk for sale that I think has probably some of the greatest sarcastic reviews I've ever read in my life. There are about 7,000 of them discussing the pleasure of milk, and it's really great reading. If you got some time to waste and you need a chuckle, go to Amazon, type in milk in the search, and then just read through the highest rated reviews.
I had no idea. My goodness, did they give you overnight shipping with that or what?
Yeah, you can get that shipping savings on that. You can also get subscribe and save. So if you buy something on a regular basis, like razor blades or whatever, they'll give you a discount from the fairly low price already if you promise to buy a certain quantity on a regular basis. We've talked a little bit about services like Dropbox and where you can store digital files. Amazon Cloud is one of the largest offline server storages that there is, and you can get 5 gig of storage on your own for free as well. And then Amazon, they offer a publishing platform. So if you always wanted to be a writer and you don't want to invest in books, you can publish on there, and you can get it onto Kindles throughout the world and get paid for it. And it's a very low-cost way to see if people actually like your writing as much as your friends and relatives say they like it.
So there could also be a danger of spending too much money on Amazon. What did you mean by that?
Well, they're really, really good at knowing what you like and trying to draw you in and purchase things that you do not need. And if you want to know what you need and don't need, those of you who are in a committed relationship, be it marriage or otherwise, you're very fortunate because you have someone who is extremely ready and able to tell you what are stupid purchases that you're going to make and what are necessary purchases. The price changes on a regular basis, so sometimes you can end up paying more for an item that you otherwise might not have had you waited a little bit or bought it sooner. And even on the deals, if you start buying something that you didn't necessarily want just because it was on sale, you can start filling up the basement and become a candidate for the TV show of Hoarders. But the good news about that is Amazon offers you a case where you can not only sell that stuff back on Amazon, probably for a discount, you can sell your used stuff, but if you sell things and you want to get it out to the virtual world, their marketplace is a pretty nice alternative to eBay, and again, it gets in front of a lot of people, and they help promote it as well, too, by putting your products where other people
might find them and like to buy them.
I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. This is On Your Money. Time now for a few more calls before our website of the week. Our next caller is Brian in Peshtigo. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if you were aware of any stable value funds available for non-institutional investors.
Great question, Brian. And stable value funds, just so people know, are kind of like annuity, fixed rate annuities, but a combination of that and a money market. It's usually offered with some kind of insurance package where they pay a little bit more in yield than what a money market or a CD pays. But you can, in theory anyway, you can get the money out when you want it. And they're usually only available through saving in a network retirement plan like a 401k, a 403b, or a 457 plan. Fixed annuities are probably your next closest thing if you're not participating in one of those plans, Brian. Even then, keep in mind, you're probably only going to get 2% to 3%, and if you get any more than that, you're probably getting something, you're not getting told the whole story. So it's probably too good to be true. And also with fixed annuities, you're going to pay a surrender charge if you pull the money out early. What I'd rather have you do is look at two different investments. One is long-term certificates of deposit with a relatively small redemption penalty. Discover Bank offers a 2%, I think, now with a 10-year CD that's about 9 months penalty for early withdrawal. And also one of our favorite investments for liquidity, safety, and yield is Series I savings bonds. And you can go to treasurydirect.gov, Brian, to look how you can buy those. They only pay about 1.76% right now, but that rate is adjusted every 6 months, every November and May, and it can go up if inflation goes up. And again, those are Series I savings bonds. We'll be talking more about those later, and we'll have a link up to the website at onyourmoney.com later on today.
Thank you, Brian, for the call. Judy in Sauk City is with us now. Hello, Judy.
Hi there. I must admit, most of your advice is not relevant to me at all. It's an interesting program. I recently had to file bankruptcy because of medical bills. I didn't have any choice. My question is there any way to rebuild my credit? And I do own a home, which I never did get behind on, but could I ever refinance it at a lower interest rate because I am paying 6% and I know the interest rates are much less? So I'm hoping you can help me with that as opposed to investing in lots of money ideas. So Thank you very much.
Yeah, Judy, thank you very much for calling. Just so you know, there are over 1 million personal bankruptcies declared every single year. Many of them are for your very same situation. It is a crisis proportion that people can get sick in this country and then have to go through the financial drag at a time when they're basically facing a life and death proposition. So it's criminal in my mind where we're at right now. So do not feel bad about it at all. What I do appreciate doing is calling and saying, all right, this happened to me. I'm going to try to restart it. I would look at a couple different things. I would look at getting a secured credit card, if you will, or even a debit card. Go to a local credit union bank. Just say, I want a secured card, and it's something that you might have to put $500 in as collateral to get $500 to charge on it. And once you prove that you can use this responsibly and build up your credit. Lenders lend trillions of dollars, and the only way they make money is if they lend money to people and get it paid back. The first part of that is they have to lend money, so they do want to lend it to people, and especially for people in your situation where they can look at that and say, okay, this was a one-time event from what you've said, Judy. And so once you get that secured credit card, you can get an unsecured one and build it up that way. It does take a while, but it can be done. It stays on the record, and it is difficult to refinance in your situation. After a few years, though, it will become easier, especially if you can get yourself back in order. But good for you. I'm glad you called, and please, you are not alone. There are literally millions of people in America who have gone through exactly what you've gone through, and I'm impressed that you had the wherewithal to call in and ask the question.
Yes, Judy, thank you so much for the call. And so sorry for your financial troubles. Oh, the website of the week, Kevin?
Well, Josh sent in, said we're putting websites that people can buy interesting things at. This week's one is thinkgeek.com. He says it's his favorite place to go for gifts for geeks and nerds, thinkgeek.com. And again, thank you, Josh. And we'll have a link to that website at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
And a reminder, what's in store next week for listeners who pledge during our end-of-the-year pledge drive?
We are going to be talking about some of the subjects, but if you call in
Go online at WPR.org during On Your Money and pledge any dollar amount whatsoever. You will get a free On Your Money mini money booklet, 20 money moves covering all the topics in depth. So you don't have to worry about driving off the road while you're listening to this information, focusing too much on the details. Pledge any dollar amount. You get the booklet. You take it home. Look at what applies to you. Keep it on as a reference. And again, any dollar amount whatsoever, you'll get a copy of this On Your Money mini money booklet.
And that's next week, next Tuesday, during our micro drive, our end of the year pledge drive. Kevin, thanks very much. Time for four more words before we go.
Spend less, have more.
Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. Thanks to Rob Ferret and to Bill Martins for producing this program. Thank you for listening and for calling in. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. And I hope you will indeed join us next week for this micro drive, the end of the year drive, a week from today, from 6 until 10 in the morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.